I want you to imagine a highly anticipated open world video game, right? And an orbital space mission carrying astronauts and a massive corporate cloud server.
Yeah, quite the lineup.
Right, you got them in your head. It sounds like the setup to a really convoluted joke, but what on earth do those three wildly different things actually have in common?
Well, the answer is entirely foundational to how our modern world operates.
Yeah.
I mean, it all comes down to infrastructure, the plumbing, if you will.
Okay, let's unpack this because that is the central thread of today's deep dive. We are analyzing a massive intelligence briefing from Taken Knight dated September 2, 2026.
And it is a dense one.
Oh, absolutely. Our mission today is to really explore this razor-thin edge between wildly ambitious engineering and actual practical execution across multiple tech sectors. We're looking at sources detailing everything from top-secret game design telemetry to literal rocket science.
Right. And the overarching theme you'll notice in this briefing is that, whether you are designing a breathtaking virtual world for millions of concurrent players, or you're launching humans into the vacuum of space, the fundamental rule never changes.
Which is.
Software complexity and technical ambition can never, ever outpace basic, reliable execution. When the plumbing fails, the whole skyscraper comes down.
Wow. Well, let's start with the virtual skyscrapers, right? Our first briefing pulls back the curtain on some newly revealed design telemetry from Rockstar Games.
Yeah, specifically looking at the development cycle of Grand Theft Auto 6.
Right. And for years, I mean, the gaming community has been demanding maximum realism. We want whether that affects vehicle handling. We want dynamic economies. But this GameSpot investigative report in the Tekken briefing shows that Rockstar engineered this incredibly comprehensive vehicle degradation simulation and then.
They intentionally ripped it out of the game.
Exactly. They just tore it out.
The development telemetry on this is fascinating. Rockstar originally engineered a system the dynamically modeled vehicular thermal
So,
dynamics.
like engine heat.
Yeah, exactly. If you were stuck in a high traffic bottleneck in Vice City, your radiator could overheat based on the ambient temperature and your engine RPM.
That is wild.
It gets crazier. They modeled progressive brake fade. So if you were braking heavily during a long pursuit, your stopping distance would gradually increase.
Oh, wow.
They even simulated spontaneous tire punctures from hitting random, dynamically generated road debris.
Wait. Gamers have been begging for this exact level of simulation for a decade, right? If players want ultimate realism, shouldn't Rockstar just give it to them?
You'd think so, but
Like, let the hardcore sim fans have their blown radiators and deal with the consequences. Why cater to a more arcade-style experience if you already spent, millions of dollars to build the physics engine?
because there was a hard limit to realism in an entertainment product, and Rockstar hit it. The internal testing feedback was apparently just brutal. Yeah. The briefing uses a specific industry term here, ludonarrative dissonance.
Ludonarrative dissonance.
Right. It adds the friction between what the gameplay mechanics force a player to do and the narrative fantasy the game is actually trying to deliver.
So it's like buying a multi-million-dollar hypercar, but spending your entire weekend doing routine oil changes in your driveway instead of, actually taking it to the track.
That is a perfect analogy.
Ah.
Yes.
Because I'm picturing it, you're weaving through Vice City traffic, you've got a five-star wanted level, police helicopters are spotlighting you, the tension is just peaking.
And your
And,
car just sputters out and dies.
right,
But
just because you forgot to check the coolant levels before starting the mission, that completely kills the cinematic pacing.
it transforms a thrilling action sequence into frustrating, mundane, mechanical chore management. I mean, a random mechanical component failure, like hitting a piece of invisible debris and blowing a tire, is purely punitive.
It just happens to
Exactly. It
you.
happens to you. You have absolutely no control over it.
Yeah.
What's fascinating here is how Rockstar actively calibrated player agency against that punitive simulation friction.
So they dialed it back.
Right. They cut the radiator overheating, they cut the random tire punctures. They deliberately chose to retain the tactical vehicle refueling mechanic.
See, that is the part that really stood out to me in the telemetry. Why keep the gas station refueling system if you're cutting all the other maintenance?
Well,
Isn't running out of gas just as annoying as getting a flat tire during a police chase?
it comes down to predictability versus randomness. A fuel gauge is visible, predictable data. You can track it in real time.
Oh, okay.
Fuel management adds clear, actionable, strategic depth to the gameplay loop. If you're in a protracted police pursuit, you have to actively assess your dashboard.
Right, you're making choices.
Exactly. You have to plan your getaway routes to intercept a service station, or you have to make a really high-pressure tactical decision to parjack a new vehicle before your tank hits empty.
It gives you a choice. It elevates the tension without feeling like, you know, the game's code is just unfairly punishing you with a random dice roll.
Exactly.
You had the data, you ignored the fuel gauge, and now you have to deal with the consequences. It prioritizes responsive agency over just tedious simulation.
It's really a masterclass in knowing when to pull back on the engineering ambition to preserve the actual user experience.
Definitely.
But, you know, Rockstar engineered a world so complex they had to scale it back voluntarily. Our next topic shows what happens when developers run into a wall they physically cannot scale back.
Yeah, we're talking about the literal physical capacity of a commercial product here. The briefing moves to CD Projekt Red and the upcoming PlayStation 5 edition of The Witcher 4, which is codenamed Project Polaris.
Right.
And according to this comprehensive Kotaku report in our packet, CD Projekt Red is releasing a physical retail box for the PS5, but the standard package will not actually include a Blu-ray disc.
Which is huge. Mm. This represents the definitive sunsetting of physical optical media in AAA gaming. And the justification here isn't solely about maximizing digital profit margins, which is what a lot of people think. It's actually a matter of hard storage mathematics.
Right. Break down the technical constraints of Project Polaris for us.
So the game is built on the next generation Unreal Engine 5, and it relies heavily on virtualized nanite geometry.
And just for those tracking the engine specs at home, nanite essentially allows developers to import film-quality source art. We're talking millions of polygons directly into the game without baking them down into lower resolution models.
Right.
So it looks absolutely incredible, but the asset bloat is just astronomical.
Exactly. So you combine that uncompressed nanite geometry with 8K texture packs and multi-language lossless audio assets, and the internal file sizes exceed 160 gigabytes for a base installation.
160 gigs.
Right. And a standard triple-layer Ultra HD Blu-ray disc maxes out at 100 gigabytes.
So it just doesn't fit.
Fitting the game on a single disc is no longer technically viable without shipping multiple discs per case.
Which introduces, what, massive manufacturing bottlenecks, increased shipping weights, complex licensing fees for multi-disc printing. It's a nightmare.
A total logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
So they are utilizing a distribution model the industry calls Code in a Box, or CIAB.
Code in a Box.
Yeah. You go to a retail store.
Yeah.
You buy the physical plastic game case, but inside it's just a highly secured digital entitlement voucher.
A download code.
Exactly. Now, to preserve the perceived value of buying a physical product, CD Projekt is packing these retail cases with what they call feelies.
Feelies, like physical extras.
Yeah, tangible collector items. So cloth maps of the Northern Kingdoms, miniature concept art books, metallic medallion replicas.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me, because it's almost like buying a beautifully framed premium vinyl record sleeve.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, you get the gorgeous gatefold artwork, the liner notes, the sheer physical weight of the product in your hands. But when you slide it open, there's no record. It's just a piece of premium cardstock with a Spotify QR code printed on it. But think about your own game library right now. Doesn't this totally sever the secondary market?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if there's no disc, what happens to digital preservation? Or even just handing a game to a friend when you're done playing it.
The secondary market is completely eradicated. The comparative analysis in the Tekken briefing is unambiguous on this. With a traditional optical disc, you maintain offline data ownership.
Right.
You can install it without a network connection, and you retain unrestricted physical resale rights. But with a code in a box, the moment that voucher is redeemed, it permanently binds the software license to your digital ecosystem account.
So the resale value drops to zero instantly.
Instantly.
But beyond the economics of it, you're losing autonomy, aren't you?
You are trading autonomy for fidelity. You become entirely dependent on digital storefront servers and high-speed broadband infrastructure just to access a product that is sitting on your shelf.
That's a scary thought.
It really is. You do not own the game. You own a revocable license to request a download of the game. Physical retail editions are effectively becoming bespoke collector merchandise.
Wow.
The core software distribution has converged inexorably towards centralized digital storefronts. The disc is dead. The data lives exclusively in the cloud.
So we're talking about a 160 gigabyte installation pushing a plastic disc to its literal breaking point, right? Which is ultimately a matter of commercial inconvenience and, you know, shifting business models.
Sure.
But when you push the physical breaking points of hardware in a vacuum, convenience is replaced by survival.
Absolutely.
And that's the exact threshold NASA and SpaceX just crossed in our next briefing document.
Yeah, this is where the concept of zero tolerance takes on its most literal definition. In human spaceflight operations, the margin for hardware anomalies isn't just low, it is statistically zero.
The briefing details a highly urgent situation regarding the joint NASA and SpaceX mission that was scheduled to transport the next operational crew rotation to the International Space Station. Oh. And the entire mission was placed on an indefinite technical hold due to an anomaly detected aboard the Crew Dragon spacecraft. The engineering chronology here is incredibly tense.
It really is. According to the telemetry reporting sourced from space.com in the briefing, on August 29, 2026, launch controllers were conducting pre-flight static testing, specifically the propellant loading procedures.
Okay.
And during this sequence, telemetry detected a pressure deviation across a manifold valve within the spacecraft's orbital maneuvering system, the Draco thrusters.
And we aren't talking about like a blown valve or a massive catastrophic pressure drop here, are we?
Not at all. The telemetry recorded a 2.1% pressure deviation.
2.1%.
A microscopic anomaly in the data stream. I mean, in commercial manufacturing, a 2% deviation is well within an acceptable margin of error. But in aerospace, you ground the fleet to chase down that blip.
Right. So the very next day, August 30, engineering teams deployed optical borescopes to visually inspect the internal valving.
And what they found was microscopic degradation on the internal fluoropolymer valve seals.
Fluoropolymer.
Okay. Essentially, an invisible erosion that was permitting a vapor leak of this spacecraft's hypergolic oxidizer. The nitrogen tetroxide.
Okay, let's break down the chemistry of this really quickly, because understanding the mechanism is the only way to grasp how terrifying this actually is. What does hypergolic mean in this context?
Hypergolic propellants are chemical combinations that spontaneously ignite the millisecond they come into contact with one another.
So you don't even need an ignition source.
No, you do not need a spark plug or any ignition source to start the engine. This is ideal in the vacuum of space because it guarantees the thruster will fire reliably every single time you command it.
Right. Less moving parts to break.
Exactly. So the Crew Dragon utilizes that dinitrogen tetroxide as the oxidizer and a propellant called monomethylhydrazine.
And they are kept strictly separated by these specific fluoropolymer seals until they meet inside the heavily shielded combustion chamber.
Correct. But if you have a degraded seal, and that highly corrosive, highly toxic oxidizer vapor leaks outside the combustion chamber.
Mm.
Right. And it expands in the vacuum of space to mix with the monomethylhydrazine propellant residing in the adjacent lines. It represents an intolerable, catastrophic hazard.
It means spontaneous, uncontrolled ignition outside the engine bell.
Yes.
It means instantaneous structural corrosion or just the complete loss of the vehicle and the crew during critical station rendezvous maneuvers.
It's a worst case scenario.
So to connect this back to our first segment with Rockstar, in GTA 6, a broken seal or a blown radiator is a simulation mechanic that you literally just patch out of the code base to make the experience more streamlined.
Exactly.
But on a Crew Dragon spacecraft, a microscopic broken seal mandates a complete mission scrub, massive propellant detanking, separating the spacecraft from the launch vehicle, and initiating hyperbaric vacuum chamber requalification testing.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it proves a vital point about engineering culture. I mean, this incident publicly reaffirms that an uncompromising aerospace safety culture must always overrule operational schedule pressures.
Which have to be massive.
The geopolitical and financial pressure to launch a crew rotation on time is immense. But the institutional discipline to say, you know, stop the countdown over a 2.1% deviation on a microscopic seal, that is the singular metric that keeps astronauts alive.
Wow. So a 2.1% pressure deviation from a degraded seal grounds a multi-million dollar rocket.
Right.
But in the digital space, the equivalent of that degraded seal, like a single overlooked logic gate, just brought down one of the largest enterprise clouds on the planet.
This brings us to the cloud security collapse at Dropbox.
Yeah.
And this is perhaps the most unnerving briefing in the entire intelligence packet.
Why is that?
Because it highlights how billions of dollars invested in advanced machine learning algorithms and zero-trust perimeter architectures can be entirely subverted by a rudimentary configuration oversight in the foundational software plumbing.
It's all about the plumbing today. The 9to5 Mac report in our packet breaks down this massive security breach across Dropbox's enterprise repositories. And it stemmed entirely from a flaw in their single sign-on or SSO token validation logic. Specifically, the protocol called SAML, which is Security Assertion Markup Language.
Right. Think of a SAML token as a highly complex cryptographic passport.
Okay.
When an employee tries to access an enterprise cloud application, the SAML token asserts to the server, this specific user has already been authenticated by their corporate identity provider. Grant them access.
So how did the attackers bypass the cryptographic security? I mean, I want to avoid dumbing this down, because the mechanism of the exploit is what makes it so dangerous. How did they spoof a mathematically secure passport?
Well, the vulnerability resided deep within Dropbox's SAML assertion parser. That's the specific backend logic responsible for reading the incoming XML data in the HTTP authorization headers.
Okay, following so far.
The system is designed to parse the token and then immediately cryptographically verify the signature to ensure the assertion hasn't been altered in transit.
Right, to make sure it's legit.
Exactly. However, due to a backend logic flaw, attackers discovered that by altering the XML node structure in the header in a highly specific way, they could actually confuse the parser.
So they manipulated the syntax of the request itself.
Exactly that. They fed the parser a spoofed SAML token wrapped in malformed XML. The logic flaw caused the system to parse the assertion of identity, grant the access, but silently drop the cryptographic signature verification step.
Wait, silently drop it?
Yeah. The backend basically said, I recognize the formatting of this identity claim, so I will accept it without checking the math proving it is real.
So let me get this straight. They spent billions building a zero-trust vault.
But the parser didn't check the cryptographic lock.
It just glanced at a forged visitor's badge and opened the door.
Basically, yes. Mm. The system accepted the assertion of identity without verifying the mathematical proof of that identity.
If a giant like Dropbox is vulnerable to a basic input validation error, it feels like the entire enterprise cloud ecosystem is just built on sand.
It's a wake-up call for sure.
What were the actual exposures here?
The exposure was total administrative access. Because the attackers bypassed the SSO logic, they bypassed multi-factor authentication entirely.
Oh, because the system thought they were already logged in.
Exactly. You don't need a user's password or their MFA text code if the system believes you've already authenticated. The briefing notes, massive exposure of confidential corporate documentation, unencrypted financial balance sheets, and proprietary source code across heavily guarded enterprise accounts.
Man, I know Dropbox rapidly deployed a hotfix to correct the parser logic and revoke the active sessions, but the exfiltration had already occurred, right?
Right. The data was gone.
So what are the tech and enterprise defense recommendations for an organization looking at this and realizing, you know, their own cloud provider might have similar vulnerabilities?
The briefing outlines three immediate aggressive defensive postures. First, organizations must routinely invalidate all active enterprise SSO sessions and mandate forced cryptographic reauthentication.
Okay.
You have to flush the system of any potentially lingering spoofed tokens.
Makes sense. Start fresh.
Second, organizations must enforce hardware-backed authentication policies. Specifically, FIDO2 physical security keys, like a YubiKey, for all privileged cloud administrative tiers.
Meaning a digital token is no longer sufficient. You need a literal cryptographic handshake from a physical piece of hardware inserted into the machine.
Correct.
And the third recommendation.
Deploy local zero-knowledge client-side encryption for highly sensitive corporate data sets prior to cloud transmission.
Prior to transmission.
Right. You encrypt the files locally on your own air-gapped machine before you ever upload them to the Dropbox servers.
I see.
That way, even if an attacker completely bypasses the SSO infrastructure and gains access to your cloud repository, all they can exfiltrate is unreadable, encrypted ciphertext because they do not possess your local decryption keys.
You essentially assume the cloud's vault is already compromised. You put your data in your own uncrackable safe and then put that safe inside the cloud provider's vault.
This raises an important question about how the enterprise sector views cybersecurity as a whole. I mean, it proves unequivocally that deploying advanced AI threat detection perimeters is utterly useless if you overlook fundamental input sanitation and XML signature validation testing.
Right.
The complex defenses don't matter if the basic plumbing leaks.
Which really brings this entire intelligence briefing into sharp focus. As we synthesize these four vastly different domains, We are looking at an industry desperately trying to balance massive ambition with the unforgiving nature of reality.
Absolutely.
From the meticulously calibrated virtual simulation systems of Vice City to the incredibly harsh realities of orbital mechanics grounding a spacecraft over a microscopic fluoropolymer seal to the collapse of a corporate cloud architecture over a bypass signature check.
The ultimate differentiator between triumph and disaster in all of these scenarios is a meticulous, almost paranoid attention to basic infrastructure.
Yeah.
True technological mastery isn't just about high-flying ambition. It's about flawless foundational execution. It is knowing what mechanics to cut, like Rockstar. Acknowledging your hard physical limits, like CD Projekt Red.
Right.
Knowing when to stop the countdown clock, like SpaceX. And recognizing that your massive cloud ecosystem is only as secure as its simplest logic gate, like Dropbox.
It's an incredibly sobering look at the state of technology in 2026. But I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over as we wrap up today's deep dive.
Let's hear it.
We look at CD Projekt Red's move with The Witcher 4, and it proves that our physical media, our games, our movies, our art, is rapidly and inevitably being locked entirely into the digital cloud. The era of physically owning your data on a disk is ending.
Without a doubt.
But then we look at the Dropbox breach, which proves that very same cloud is startlingly vulnerable to the simplest of human logic errors. So if we no longer physically own our data and the digital vaults holding it are fundamentally flawed, where is our digital history actually safe?
That is the existential question every tech enterprise, and really every consumer, is going to be forced to answer in the very near future.
Well, thank you for joining us as we unpack this incredible intelligence briefing. For the full exclusive print and archive editions of the material we covered today, make sure to point your browser over to teakinggame.com. Keep questioning the technology around you, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.